Welcome to episode 293 of the Energy Talks podcast. I'm energy and climate journalist Markham Hislop. Before she was Premier of Alberta, Danielle Smith was a Calgary Talk radio show host. She's interviewed me a couple of times, including in April of 2019, about my book. Sitting in the waiting room, I listened to Smith interview a well-known climate denier and field comments from her audience. It was a gong show of epic proportions, complete with wild accusations and shouting. Now, watching her performance as premier over the past 18 months, I'm often struck by how much it resembles her talk show. When it comes to energy issues and policies, one word comes to mind: chaos. On many occasions, I've asked myself, how in the world can anyone run a government like this? To answer that question, I'm joined by Mount Royal University political science professor Dwayne Bratt. So welcome to the interview, Dwayne.
Hey, Markham. Happy to be here. And I was on Danielle's show a number of times as well, but I, of course, knew her before her radio career because she was involved in politics prior to that. And she's been a public commentator of one sort or another for decades.
So what do you think about my comment about gong show, chaos? Any of those words come to mind when you...
That was at its strongest, I think, just after she became premier and during the leadership race for the UCP, where she just seemed to be stepping into it one time after another. And we saw this in press conferences. We saw it with the controversy over talking to Art Pazlowski, the preacher, over his court case. Where she seemed to treat the job just as a talk show host. I actually think she's had, in some respects, a bit more discipline since she won the May election. Not entirely, and we can talk about that, but most of the drama seems to have died down compared to where it was, you know, this time last year, for example.
I'll give you my take on that. And for listeners, particularly those who are not based in Alberta, she became leader when the former premier, Jason Kenney, was forced out in a leadership review. And she immediately stepped in a number of cow patties, as we say in Western Canada. And the thing that's important here is that she went on TV, or she gave interviews where she apologized and she tried to explain her position. And then she just stopped. And I think the reason she stopped is because nobody cares. She says the most outrageous things and tweets about the most outrageous things, and nobody cares. I think she just stopped. She realized she didn't have to.
Well, there are things that I think I have taken issue with, and I think others have taken issue with since she won the May election. It hasn't hurt her. I would argue she's more popular now than she was at that time. She's still in a honeymoon phase. And that's because despite the issues around transgender issues or the pension plan or municipal parties, she has got a major foil, and that's Justin Trudeau. And so whatever she says about another topic, people just seem to ignore that because they focus on the attacks on Trudeau. And quite frankly, Trudeau gives her enough ammunition on almost a daily matter. So her mantra for months, for over a year, has been stay in your lane, stop interfering into provincial jurisdiction. And yet almost every day, Trudeau is trying to interfere into provincial jurisdiction in one way or the other. Today it's housing. The day before it was the child lunch program. The day before that it was pharmacare. The day before that was dental care. So Trudeau, I think, has helped Smith. It's given her a target, a very rich target. And that, I think, has allowed Albertans to ignore a lot of the other stuff where she has promised things, she has said stuff, she has violated some campaign promises, but she actually hasn't enacted policy on the pension. She hasn't, in fact, created a provincial police force. She's just created the ground conditions for that. She has given a speech about transgender, but she actually hasn't brought in regulations. So let's see what happens when she actually implements this stuff. And as is looking very likely, Trudeau is not there. Then what does she do? So let's stay tuned. I'll also say it's not unusual for people, for politicians, to use their background as a lens of which they view their job. I mean, how many lawyers do we see that still analyze things through a legal framework? Think about Stephen Guilbeault. He often still sees climate issues through his environmental activism lens. So to say that Smith is viewing her job through a talk show lens, yeah, she is.
Well, okay, if we want to compare lawyers as premiers versus talk show hosts as premiers, that's a lens of its own. But I've had you on a couple times and interviewed you about energy issues. And one of them was R-Star, where she had a credit program that was supposedly $20 billion, but really the cost to the government would have been $6 billion to clean up old wells that are abandoned wells. And you called her corrupt.
Well, I called it corrupt because she had been a lobbyist advocating for this policy.
Exactly.
Then she became a premier advocating the same policy. We often see politicians become lobbyists, but this was a case of a lobbyist becoming a politician, which is a bit more unusual. But that's a good illustration. She talked about it. She floated the idea, but she actually hasn't done anything about it, right? And so was this just a trial balloon? Was this just the Tuesday show where we're going to talk about R-Star, and then the Wednesday show we're going to talk about police, and then on the Friday we're going to bring in Markham Hislop and bash him, right? So the attention
span. She would if she could. Though I will say, we formally asked her to appear on this podcast, and she politely declined. I don't know why, Duane.
She does appear on podcasts of all sorts, you know, so
but usually friendly ones as a rule.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, look, but there are many other things. Okay. Yeah, on my beat, which is energy with some climate, it doesn't look like what you're describing. It looks like one cow patty after another. And the renewables moratorium that was declared in August and then was rescinded in February, on February 29th, with some rule changes that were pretty outrageous. And then they got softened in the actual regulations, but nobody talked about those. And that was pretty chaotic. And I had Dan Balaban from Greengate Power on here, who's a developer, talking about what it meant for the industry. And he was just shaking his head. He's like, you can't do this as a government and run regulations and policy like that when we're talking about investing billions of dollars. It just makes no sense.
Well, okay. So there are so many issues at play. I didn't talk about renewables, but on that file, I would agree with you. I think it was totally chaotic. She lied multiple times about where the origins come from this. And I think probably the best illustration of this is the Narwhal. Drew Anderson did a FOIP request, and all he got was a date, a title, and some boilerplate at the top, and everything else was redacted. That was all I needed. That itself was a smoking gun. Because the date was early June, so just after Nathan Newdorf, the utilities minister, was appointed. Okay, the boilerplate was, this is what the Alberta Utilities Commission does. When you look at that, and I, you know, teach how to write policy memos and all of this, that's a memo that you write for the first meeting. So brand new minister, he's about to meet the AUC. So they give him this boilerplate about what the AUC actually does and all of that. And then the third piece of evidence was the title, which was renewables suspension. Okay. So this was June, early June, just after the May election. When does the moratorium come in? Late August. How does Smith describe the moratorium initially in August? We got a request from AUC. AUC asked us to do this. That memo despite all the redactions, told me that no, Newdorf was telling AUC in June, months before, that they were going to bring in a moratorium. They did bring in the moratorium. It caused chaos for the renewable sector. And then the regulations came, or the announcement came in late February, that totally, the AUC later released its report on land use, and there was no connection. The report that AUC did and the way that Smith described it at the end of February, those are two very different stories. So you might say she lied about that too.
Might say?
Yeah, might say. So the point is, yeah, the renewables has been a fiasco. I wrote an op-ed in the Globe and Mail saying that this was going to drive out investment. This was going to create uncertainty. And this was a deliberate ideological choice made by Smith. And then you go further back, before the election, before she became premier, before the leadership race, and she's having discussions on podcasts with Rob Anderson, just ripping into renewables. Not the, you know, renewables have some flaws like other energy sources. No, it was just hammer and tong against renewables. So I think that is been a consistent policy that she has brought through. Whether she is telling the truth about where the origins come from or what the rationale was. You know, she was talking about wind turbines the other day to a parliamentary committee saying they're bigger than the Calgary Tower, and couldn't really explain, you know, what a pristine viewscape was and all those other things. Quite frankly, she hates renewable energy. And the reason she does so is because she sees Alberta as a natural gas province and renewables are a competitor. She sees it as a competitor. And so, yeah, I think on that case, on the renewables file, yeah, she has done stuff besides just talk about it. And it has caused, you know, market uncertainty.
Well, let me add a little context here, because I interviewed Atta Rahman, who is the grid planner for AESO, the Alberta Electric System Operator.
Yeah.
So he's on the pointy end of the stick on this topic. And he started out the interview by saying, we expect a significant retirement of thermal operations. Now, some of that will be coal a little bit, but also natural gas. And we expect a significant adoption of renewables in the electric, the Alberta power grid. And I went, yeah. What? That's not what the premier said. That's yeah. Exactly the opposite. Now, here's an irony I want to note for you. I've had a number of guests on about power grids and renewables in the last couple of months, because I mean, this yeah. is a complex issue and we need to understand it, right? Not yep. just for Alberta. And I have been told categorically that when you get over a couple percentage points in renewables, you must re-engineer the grid. You have to bring in more storage and more software and a whole bunch of stuff. And Alberta hasn't done that. It has 14% renewables in its grid and has done nothing, very little, to prepare the grid to accept those renewables. So the thing that she's complaining about, the problems, her government in part created by not providing the policy framework to direct AESO and the Alberta Utilities Commission and whoever else needed to be to change the grid to work with those renewables.
So on that point, then, is one of the reasons to have the moratorium and then create rules so that these aren't built is to prevent that grid transformation, that grid upgrading that would be required. That if you limit the renewables, then you don't need to do these other things.
That's some very serious, that's some bad thinking. And I'll tell you why. Because Atta himself, he said, look, we are, for the last 4 or 5 years, there's been a tsunami of new technologies coming in that are transforming grids around the world. And, yep. you know, we're monitoring these on the transmission side, the distribution side, and we'll be adopting many of them ourselves over, you know, as we've got discussion papers and we're preparing for it. So that you can't keep the grid cannot be kept in a status quo situation. It is going to change under the weight of technological change whether Danielle Smith likes it or not. Right. And it's the chaotic nature of there's no plan. There's no strategy. The government is not providing the policy direction to the system operator and the regulator and is often contradicting. That's not the way government should plan these kinds of things.
Yes, unless you just really, really, really dislike renewables, and then that is the goal, and you'll figure out the rest later on. Now, also think about this. What she keeps saying that they will hit these targets by 2050, right? They will have a net zero electricity grid. She doesn't just say, no, it's a hoax. We're not doing this. Instead, she sets a timeline. She's also set a timeline that she hopes that the Alberta population doubles by 2050. So you're going to need greater electricity demand and a net zero simultaneously. How is that going to happen? The basic argument she's making is through carbon capture and small modular reactors. That those are the two things that will save this grid. So we'll have to see. She's not going to be around in 2050. I don't know if I'll be around in 2050, but I think that's why she chose 2050. Is that so far in the future?
Well, I'll go back to my introduction where I said, "How in the world can anyone run a government like this?" Because anyway, here's another one: carbon tax.
Yeah.
So the leader of the Canadian Conservative Party, Pierre Poilievre, has been on this bandwagon for a long time now, and he came out with Axe the Tax campaign. Yep. And in anticipation of the April 1st increase from $65 a ton to $80 a ton.
Yep.
And in fairness to Smith, she's not the only premier, conservative premier, who's jumped on this bandwagon. That she's done so pretty enthusiastically. And I know it's to criticize Guilbeault and criticize Trudeau, but she's quite happy repeating and regurgitating nonsense, stuff that isn't true.
But this is not unique to Alberta and Alberta conservatives. Bear in mind, before the federal backstop kicked in, the conservatives were fighting the NDP's consumer-based carbon tax. And I maintain that I'm not convinced that Justin Trudeau would have brought in the Pan-Canadian framework if Alberta hadn't moved first. I've had this debate with others, but I thought it was much easier for Trudeau to come in when Ontario had a cap and trade, Quebec had a cap and trade, BC had a carbon tax, and Alberta had a carbon tax. So the conservatives in Alberta have been fighting a consumer-based carbon tax for years. The April 1st one, there were similar protests, April 1st of last year. And every time the price goes up. Now, outside of Alberta, we've had multiple elections on the carbon tax. It hasn't risen to the same vitriol that it is now. In fact, Erin O'Toole adopted a similar type of carbon pricing that looked and sounded an awful lot like a carbon tax. He just couldn't call it that. But it was a realization that he wasn't going to win that fight because he saw what happened to Andrew Scheer in 2019. What is different now is A, the cost of living is much higher than it was then, and the carbon tax continues to rise up. So what you see is a coalition of governments. You've got some governments, primarily in Atlantic Canada, who were focused on the increase. And they felt that they could fight the increase because they fought them over the home heating fuel in Atlantic Canada. Then they merged with people like Scott Moe and Danielle Smith, who just want to scrap the tax from day one. And so that's what you saw was a coalition of like-minded people. And it's a simple slogan. Axe the tax. You saw the same thing in BC over the HST, which was better policy, but you can't go wrong attacking a tax policy.
Okay. Dwayne, we've spent 20 minutes or thereabouts talking about various issues on which, she's lied, she's done this. It's not handled herself well. It's been kind of chaotic. And I don't want to do the entire, I don't want to spend the entire interview talking about that, about various issues and whether she handled it well or didn't handle it well. But I remember a conversation that you and I had, and I'm pretty sure it was you and I, but you'll remind me if you weren't the interviewee, where you talked about how Jason Kenney was an incompetent premier. The UCP were incompetent in the running of government. They would leave public health orders too late, and then their bureaucrats would be up all night rewriting them, those sorts of things. They weren't very good managers. And I'm sorry, but Danielle Smith looks as bad or worse than Jason Kenney when it comes to the actual running of government.
And you would have thought, and I did say that, and you would have thought that Kenney would have been a better manager because that had been his trademark prior to becoming premier. It was his trademark before COVID hit. But I think he was such an organized man with spreadsheets and timelines that when the crisis hit, he was going back and forth between what he should do, what he wanted to do, how did this divert from the plan? And that's where I think the chaos came from, is you had a very organized person not being able to handle a curveball, a significant curveball. And then this created, and he had to be front and center. So he had to lead the press conferences, and then they would scramble to determine how to deal with that after the fact, because there would be a lot of details that were missing by the stakeholders of those groups. And those could be, you know, hockey organizations or small business owners who would hear these announcements and go, well, what does that mean? It's Friday afternoon. We've got a game on Friday, or my business is open on Sunday. And that's where the problems came in. Smith is a bit more unusual, as I said, because she's floated a lot of stuff, the renewables being the exception, but she hasn't done a lot of that stuff. So she floated pulling out of the pension plan. She took so much backlash on that, she simply stops talking about it and hopes it kind of goes away. She promised her signature policy idea during the election campaign was a tax cut. Budget comes out, there's no tax cut. What's the response of Albertans? Crickets. And that's because, as I said off the beginning, she has a great foil and she has got her thumb on public opinion, which is so anti-Trudeau that it doesn't seem to matter what she says on these other things as long as she can keep going after Trudeau. And so I wonder what happens when Trudeau is not there. And she can even say stuff that's legitimate, but she can also say stuff, and she commented on a graph that Trevor Toom had put together, you know, looking at the carbon price in the country and then singling out Quebec because they use a different cap and trade system. So she says that this is actually about redistributing wealth from Alberta to Quebec. And I know where she got that idea. It's the equalization formula. But she's completely off base here, and she's been asked to correct it, and she hasn't, because I think there's enough Albertans who are convinced that we're paying the carbon tax to give that money to Quebec. And logic and facts mean nothing. So is that a cynical politician? Is that one with her hand on the pulse of public opinion? You know, that will be up to you to figure out.
Yeah, I saw that tweet from Trevor where he said, that's the incorrect interpretation of my graph.
Which is I could hear Trevor's voice when he wrote that. But it's made no difference. It's made no difference. And I'll give you another reason why Smith is being able to slide by. And that's because the NDP are in the middle of a leadership race. And as part of that leadership race, you know what the NDP is doing? They are reflecting on why they lost the May election, right? And so when you've got the opposition internalizing things, it's tough for them to mobilize against Smith. Let's see what happens, as I suspect, when Nahed Nenshi becomes leader of the NDP, and then they start to go head-to-head.
Yes, I think that will be. I will have to say that I don't think Rachel Notley was a particularly effective opposition leader, especially on the energy and climate files, given her success, and arguably very substantial success as premier, bringing in the climate leadership plan and some of the energy policies that she did. And then she wouldn't even talk about them as when she became opposition leader and when she ran campaigns in 19 and 23.
Absolutely. She refused to talk about that. She obviously felt that that was not a winnable argument. It appears now the NDP is abandoning the idea of a consumer-based carbon tax. All of the candidates, to my knowledge, have disavowed it in some fashion or another. And they based it on, popularity. But where the question, I think, is going to come, and Trudeau is trying to make this argument, unfortunately, I don't think he's got the credibility or people are even listening, is what is your alternative measurement? Smith could go back and say, well, we have the TIER program and we have an industry-based carbon tax. And she has actually handled this better than Scott Moe, where Moe accidentally told the truth by saying, yeah, we looked at all other alternatives and everything was worse than the carbon tax. Well, what does that tell you? So it will be I have no doubt, if Poilievre is elected, and again, it's looking more and more like that, he will scrap the consumer-based carbon tax. But he has given no indication of where he goes next. Does that mean getting rid of regulations? Does that mean getting rid of the industry-based tax? He hasn't answered those questions, and the premiers aren't answering those questions either, because there's an obvious follow-up that if you're not going to do anything, what do you think about climate change? And I don't think they can hide in the hole like the oil bros do and say, but China.
That's my line, but China. Okay. So essentially my takeaway from these conversations is that while she may have, and no one denies her political skills and her communication skills, but I would say that she is now a far more accomplished politician than when she led the Wild Rose Party and lost in the 2012.
And I would say she is better now than she was a year ago.
Yeah, fair. I would agree with that. I watched her at the World Petroleum Congress in September in Calgary, and went to, I was at the press conference, asked her a couple of questions, and the way she handles herself and answers, it's very politically skilled. But
she has learned to stop talking as well. Right? In the early days, she was still in talk show host mode, which is keep talking. And the longer she talked, the more trouble she got into. And to hear, I will say, going back to the pensions issue, because that is deeply unpopular. And I think that she blew some capital on that, and she realized that and stopped. But in her discussion about the pensions, she literally focused only on the dollar amount and the overpayment. She didn't mention that this was leverage against Trudeau or this was about oil and gas. She let her people do that. She showed some discipline on that file, even though prior to August of 2023, she did mention that all the time. I think she has learned and gotten better. And that's just, what we call the discipline of power.
In the course of this conversation, you've certainly explained why she did what she did, at least from some of this stuff. And I'm not convinced that she's not chaotic, that she runs a good government, that this is the right way to do energy and climate policy. It still seems as chaotic as it does when I did the introduction.
Yeah.
And I was looking through the data, the emissions data the other day. And so Alberta is 38% of Canadian emissions. Saskatchewan is another 10%. Yep. That's half of all of Canadian emissions come from two provinces. And
that's been the case for a very long time, right? None of that is new.
No, that is new, actually. because Alberta's has grown and other provinces have dropped. Yeah. So it is, the proportions are different.
The proportions may be different, but the fact that Alberta and Saskatchewan are at the top of the list, that's been there for a long time.
Right. And then the other thing that's new, of course, is the pressure for the oil and gas emissions cap and to actually have emissions and on and on and on. On the energy file, I have a hard time finding an issue where I would say, good job, Danielle. You did good on this one. You might be able to think of one or two, but goodness gracious, in the epicenter of the Canadian energy industry, surely we should be able to come up with more than one or two.
Well, and you're focused on the energy climate file. And so the point that I'm making, with the exception of the renewables, and even that policy, as chaotic and I think bad for the economy, was popular to do, at least in the segment that she listens to, which is her rural caucus. Where I think she's in more danger is not on the energy file. It's on the pensions, the trans issues, the school curriculum, the policing, the municipal parties. And what unites all of those is the ideological lens that she is going through. So I think that's an important recognition.
Yeah, I had recently did some town halls in rural Alberta, places like Nanton, and I'd have to say we ran into the typical rural voter, and they're not plugged into the global energy transition. They're, they're listening to the narratives, the Alberta narratives, oil and gas narratives. And okay, so I get it. I mean, she's reflecting that, but I don't know where to go with this, because this industry and electricity, for that matter, scream out for rational policy to adapt to rapidly changing trends at the global level, or even at the regional, like North American level. And I wouldn't say I despair, but I worry a lot about Alberta, because the window to adapt is closing a little bit every month. And I see somebody in the premier's chair who doesn't seem to be capable of leading the charge, the process to adapt, to make those adaptations. And so when the shoe begins to pinch, which it probably will around 2030 is my guess, Alberta will be unprepared. So
when the crisis really hits, and I agree with you on that point, historians are going to look back at a period in time and said this was the moment where change could occur. And the only way to explain that is why they're operating this way. And motivated reasoning is a hell of a drug. You can convince yourself of a lot of things. You can say, as we have, if you watch some of the carbon tax protests, not the nationwide ones, but the ones in Alberta, the one that was outside between Cochrane and Calgary, and you scratch the surface, it wasn't about the increase in the carbon tax. It was climate's a hoax. Trudeau's treasonous and needs to be hung. I have no freedom, even though I've got a fuck Trudeau bumper sticker and a $150,000 truck. Try having a fuck Putin bumper sticker and drive through Moscow, and you'll learn what freedom is and is not. But there's enough people who have convinced themselves of that. And she is not leading. She's reflecting that. And so we often wonder what the role of a leader is, of what a premier is. Are they to lead us to where we should go, we want to go, to make the tough decisions? Or are they to represent the views of the people who voted for you?
So is this a case where, as Ralph said, and I love this quote, I really do. He said, I don't lead, I get in front of a parade. I get in front of a parade. Yeah. And so is this, given that her base is in rural Alberta, is this a case of where Take Back Alberta and David Parker and people like that, Arthur Pawlowski, they made the parade. And now she stepped out in front of it.
So the difference with Klein is he was looking, I think, broader. He had a much broader base, a better understanding of widespread public opinion. Smith, I think, has already discounted the second largest city in the province. I don't think she gives a damn about the city of Edmonton, and I think that is apparent. There are rumors that she is going to try to step in and possibly fire the city council, as occurred in Chestermere, or taken some other sort of financial aspects. We saw the cancellation of the Edmonton Hospital, the new Edmonton Hospital. I think her initiative around municipal parties, well, it's about Calgary. It's also about Edmonton. So she's writing off that. I think she's writing off parts of Calgary, and she is much more focused on the base of support that she has and maintaining that base of support, which, as you mentioned, is in rural Alberta. That is different than the Ralph Klein approach.
Well, folks, we've come to the end of the interview, and I have to say, Duane, this is highly entertaining. I'm not sure I'd want to live in Alberta at the moment. I'll just share this with you. I am appalled by the number of Albertans that I know. You know, I lived in Calgary for many years and go back regularly. That's where my network is, my family is. And I get asked all the time, when should I sell? When should I sell my house and move to BC or somewhere else? That's not a good sign.
And yet, you look at migration patterns, and where are people moving to? They're moving to Alberta.
The land of
milk and honey, at least in the short run.
All I have is anecdote and you have data. What can I tell you?
Yeah,
data trumps anecdote. Well, look, Duane, thank you very much for this. I'm going to have you back because we need to understand everything about energy and climate in Canada goes through Alberta.
Absolutely, it does.
And
this
we need to
understand the energy capital.
And not only do we, it's one thing to criticize Smith, it's another thing to understand where all of this comes from and why they do. And you know, I obviously have my own biases, which I kind of cop to in the introduction. So I appreciate these because you give me more insight into what her operational views are, why she does what she does, what motivates her. I appreciate that. I think my audience benefits from that.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. I mean, I will leave with this, and I probably said this before, the best predictor of the Smith government is to have a better understanding of the Wild Rose Party, because the same people are in charge right now. They may have lost in 2012. They may have crossed the floor in 2014, but they're in charge now. And it's not just Smith.
That sounds like grist for another podcast.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks, Duane.
Okay, thanks, Markham.